VolitionRx, a multinational epigenetics company revolutionizing cancer diagnosis with the development of simple, easy-to-use, cost-effective blood tests involving a range of cancers and other diseases. Volition's clinical trials in human health have shown promising results in detecting several cancer types, including colorectal, lung, and a variety of bloodborne cancers. VolitionRx. Web address, volition.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Ukraine crisis. Information dominance. This is a style of warfare that is extremely successful if and when you control the levers of distribution of information around the world, which, by the way, is in the control of the United States and its allies. So we begin with information dominance. It is January and February of 2022, right prior to the invasion. How did the U.S. and its allies use ID to influence the world's opinion of Russia, and why, Gregory?
Well, you have to look at the, it goes back a long way, but you have to look at everything since the collapse of the Cold War, when the Reagan-Thatcher group and their supporters basically said, look, we want to stop the Cold War. We want to destroy the Soviet Union and bring post-Soviet Russia into the West as part of the capitalist world, the free market world. There was a group, both conservatives and liberals, who opposed that. They kept thinking, no, what we understand and what we're comfortable with is the Cold War, and really, Russia is the same as the Soviet Union. And in fact, this was something we saw during the Cold War. We saw people not referring to the Soviet Union or the USSR, but calling the Soviets the Russians. Well, that was actually a misnomer, because the Russian nationalists were as opposed to the communist Soviets as was anybody in the West. And they eventually worked to overthrow the Soviets. But the reality was that we saw this continuing strand of thinking within the West, which was anti-Russian, thinking that Russia equates to Soviets, which equates to communists, which equates to the enemy. So this real reluctance to give up the Cold War was a hallmark of the post-1990-91 period. And ultimately, of course, it was seen as a useful tool just because it had such rhetorical value in the U.S. presidential elections in 2016. And the whole question of Russian interference in the elections was resonant because it smacked of the Soviets and the communists and the like.
And Gregory, so, I mentioned that our generation was trained on Cold War. I was instructed in Russian language when I was in high school, because the idea was the world was going to come to an apocalyptic contest somewhere in the 20th century. And the third war would be fought with atomic weapons, the fourth with rocks. You remember that witticism.
Oh, sure.
And we were all educated to think only of the threat of communism. That did not recede quickly. Is that correct? It didn't go away.
That's correct. And in fact, there was a vested interest, particularly post-2016, of people saying that the Russians are a great rallying point, if you like, for jingoism. And it got in a lot of conservatives. It got in a lot of liberals. And so it was used there. And now it escalated. Now, when we saw President Biden in political trouble, literally from the day he took office in 2021, he started this approach about saying that this great threat was still there from Russia, and he kept escalating it. And of course, after the disastrous late August U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, the way in which the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan, and when President Biden's poll numbers plummeted, they were looking around for this tail to wag the dog. And that's what happened. They started escalating the claims that Russia was going to attack, that Ukraine was going to itself attack the Russian-speaking areas of Ukraine and so on. It just kept escalating and escalating. And so we now see the point where Russia felt itself under immediate threat, because the West was essentially saying, under Biden's leadership, that Ukraine was going to become part of NATO, which was in fact not even really feasible. And we saw this approach going on since literally the late 20th century and through 2004 and so on, when in fact we ran a conference in Kiev about the prospects of Ukraine joining NATO, and basically thought that this was ill-advised for the same reasons that Thatcher and Reagan suggested. But we saw this whole momentum of demonizing Russia without any actual analysis or the like. And you started to see where the Russians themselves became paranoid, thinking that they better move as quickly as possible. And of course, the ultimate trigger, if you like, was on that January 25th statement by President Biden encouraging.
Here we are bogged down in Ukraine with NATO feeding heavy weapons and the suggestion of escalation all the time. So we go to another lesson learned so far from the Ukraine conflict, which is offense is still superior to defense. Is that how to read the Moskva?
Oh, well, that's part of that, not just the Moskva, but the whole approach in this conflict. Defensive wars are like reactive warfare. Reactions are never as positive as actions, whether it's in information dominance or whether it's in physical activities or in kinetic warfare. The offense always has the initiative and the advantage. However, that doesn't mean that you don't have to plan your offensive and defensive measures appropriately. But inevitably, when you get a new offensive technology or weapon, it takes time to build up the defensive capabilities and countermeasures. And in the case of the loss of the Russian heavy cruiser Moskva just recently, the reality was that that the technology should have enabled the Russians to use a less visible form of attack. It was sheer arrogance that they didn't comprehend the capability of the Neptune anti-shipping missiles, which the Ukraine defense industry had developed. This was it was always known to be a fairly competent system, and then you had the adaptation, if you like, of using that missile system with the Turkish provided Bayraktar unmanned aerial vehicles, so that we had the Bayraktars operating as distractions to the sensors on the Moskva, and enabling the Neptune missiles to go through and hit the ship. In reality, of course, the submarine-launched cruise missiles would have been a better option for the Russian Navy, and they have them. They could have used them. But it was a degree of arrogance that they felt that they could operate with impunity off the coast of Ukraine, simply because they had essentially dismantled the Ukrainian Navy. So the Ukrainian Navy itself didn't provide an option for Kiev, but the Neptune system certainly did.
And therefore, what we're witnessing, to summarize the lessons learned so far, is the Russians took the bait, which was the idea that NATO was going to embrace Ukraine, which was not entertained. In taking the bait, they then permitted their adversaries to define them as predatory.
Correct.
Or aggressive, or you know the metaphors that are being used about Putin. And in taking the bait and then being defined by it, they then use sloppy tactics that don't take into account their knowledge of the adversary. And they continue to underestimate the ability of NATO to provide weapons that slow down or defeat the Russians. Are those the lessons learned so far? We have about a minute.
Yes. In fact, what I summarize it as with Biden making this, goading Russia into the action, was anything that your adversary wants you to do, goads you to do, offers to you as a gift or says you will do, these are almost certainly the things you do not want to do. The fact that Vladimir Putin took the bait was an important failure for Russia. But we should be asking the questions as to why President Biden offered that bait in the first place, because the result is that Russia has now firmly moved into the opposition camp. It's now firmly allied with the People's Republic of China to the advantage of Beijing and to the ultimate disadvantage of the West, as well as to Russia itself. So the question is not why Putin took the bait. Well, that's one question, but why Biden offered it.
To be continued. Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.